Okay, we do have a quorum, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Members, I want to just give you a little bit of information about what we're going to do today. We're going to remove from the agenda House File 2245. That's going to be put off till another time. I've had some discussion with the commissioner, and we have some miscommunication here about what's happening with that particular piece of legislation, so we're just going to hold that one off. And I want to indicate that the first House file on here, 2116, is actually now incorporated in, at least mostly, in the amendment that we're going to hear to House File 2112. So we're going to do House File 2112, so just take those first two bills and mark them off your agenda. And House File 2112 is what we're going to look at. And I want to tell you, we don't have all of a sudden money in this committee to deal with, but there's some policy stuff related to the funding that I want to get us to have in our bill that we have here in case we do get some money, which the chair is looking for. I'm looking for some funding for this committee that would possibly be coming in through House File 2112. So, I hope that's clear. I think what I'm going to do is just, let's see. So the two amendments that you have, Representative Bly, do you want to take over the chair?
Sure.
Yeah, we can do that. Let's look at the minutes from the last meeting, and it looks like Representative Metza really must be talking about those minutes that he wants us to approve. Is that right?
That was exactly what
okay.
I was
talking about. Okay, so Representative Metza, moves we approve amendments from March 10th, and we'll do that one first. Any discussion on the March 10th amendments? All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Might as well keep a good thing.
And so he also wants to move that we approve the amendments from March 12th. Any discussion on those amendments? Any corrections? Not. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Isaacson, it looks like you want to do the 19th, though.
I was hoping to
do that. Okay, I saw that look.
About it all weekend, so.
Representative Isaacson wants us to approve the amendments from March 19th. Any discussion? Not. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and I believe we've now approved our minutes. Is that right? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you, Representative Bly, and I'm going to ask you just to take over, and I'll try to explain what we're doing here with these bills. Mr. Chair and committee members, what I'd like to do is move a couple of amendments. We'll start with the simplest one that has to do with adding the words that we talked about. We talked about this amendment in the committee, but I think at the time that we went to put it on, we either didn't have a quorum and there was a reason we didn't add it on. So it would be the A2 amendment to House File 2112.
Okay, we do have in our packets the A1, and I understand the A1 and A2 are identical. Is that correct?
I don't know about an A1 amendment. I have an A2 and I have a 973. It's the A2 amendment. Do you not have the?
I don't have
it. Oh, I thought maybe I didn't.
Let's get Representative Lai the A2 amendment.
Okay. Yes, I am looking at the A2. Okay. All right.
Okay,
so it.
I'm actually missing the bill.
Yeah, can you bring me the bill? Thank you.
Okay. I think we all have what we need now. Mr. Chairman and committee members, what this does on page 1, line 7, is it adds that the Housing Finance Agency will work in collaboration with each of the councils of color, the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council on Black Minnesotans, and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, to look at this big issue that we have, the disparity gap in affordable home ownership and rental housing for all communities of color and American Indians in Minnesota. As committee members know, Minnesota right now, unfortunately, has a record of having the worst racial disparities in these areas of any state in the nation. It's not something we're proud of. It's something we need to deal with. And the experts in those communities who are represented to us through those councils, we want them to consult with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I think this is probably a non-controversial amendment. Just want to make sure that we can put it on. We talked about it in the last committee, last time this bill was before us. So, Mr. Chairman, that's I move that we adopt that amendment.
Okay. And just for clarification, I was in error when I said the A1 and A2 were identical. There's a difference in the word consultation and collaboration, and you want the word collaboration. So
that's right. Mr. Chair, I don't even have the A1 amendment.
Yeah, so the author has moved
I don't need
the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that which he wants.
Partially, that's right. That's the first step.
Okay.
Yes.
Any questions? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay, you have the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second one is a longer amendment. That's the A140973. Do you have that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, what this does is gets our Housing Finance Agency in line to do that kind of work in several different places, and it also brings in the house file that we're not going to consider separately today because we had a lot of information on that one, the house file 2116. Let me just go through it. So on the first page 1, we just put into the session law from last time. This is language that came, most of it, from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency itself. That says that they will make continuous improvements in its ongoing efforts to reduce the racial and ethnic inequalities in home ownership rates, and will seek opportunities to deploy increasing levels of resources toward those efforts. That just restates that commitment there. And then on page 2, line 232, this is taking the House file that dealt with homeownership grants for families with children with disabilities. We heard some very compelling testimony from families who had children with autism, in particular, who are dealing with being evicted frequently because of destruction that may come with those from those children in their homes. That they don't have the special, they don't have homeownership, and they don't have maybe some of the special arrangements they should have in their homes that would help them deal with this kind of disability. So we're saying that within the challenge fund, the agency must encourage applications for those kinds of unique housing needs. And this was the suggestion of the agency that the challenge fund would be the area where they would most likely be able to do that kind of work.
Okay.
The last part.
Just for clarification, that was that the 2116.
It was originally House File 2116, right, which we had extensive testimony
yes.
on. And
yes,
and
I remember.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, does it appear in the agenda today? It's really part of this bill now. And then the last part is section that deals with affordable housing disparities report, line 3.9. That provides that the Housing Finance Agency provide to the chairs and ranking minority members of the House and Senate with jurisdiction over the MHFA to have the draft and final versions of their affordable housing plan before and after it is submitted to the agency's board for consideration. We do get this report. We usually get it, as far as I know, we get it afterwards. I'm not sure if we get it before. This indicates that we would have a chance to see it before and after. And this is when we're not in session. Usually, I believe it's in August and September that the report is submitted to us. So this makes sure that this committee with jurisdiction over housing would have a chance to really look at that. And the other part of it is that it asks the MHFA to annually report to us what progress, if any, they are making in closing the disparity gap. This should say the racial disparity gap. I think that word got left out of there. I would like to, Mr. Chairman, make a very minimal oral amendment, unless anybody has an objection, on line 3.16 between the and disparity. This would be an amendment to the amendment. Would that add the word racial?
All right.
If you could just see if anyone has any objection to that amendment to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Are there any objections to the author's oral amendment, adding the word racial between the and disparity in line 3.16? Seeing no objections, I'll rule that it is included.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd be glad to answer any questions on this. I know that the folks, this is amending our home bill, the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable. I know that those folks would like to provide some testimony about that issue, but I guess if we could put this on the bill, then the bill is in the shape that I'd like the whole bill to be.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of adding an amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very well.
So, Mr. Chairman, I understand that there's some folks who would like to talk a little bit more maybe about some of the progress they're making in looking at these issues with the agency. And I think Lotna Phillips, do you want to provide a little bit more information to the folks? We're still, as I mentioned, members, trying to see whether or not we can get some additional funding into this committee. We haven't quite totally given up. This would be the base bill from which we would respond and act if we're able to do that.
Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify again on House File 212 again. My name is Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the Interim Executive Director of MICA, President and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions, and Honorary Board Member of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Just want to reiterate that we support the amendments that have been added on to House File 2112 and are very hopeful that we can move forward in providing some resources to this bill. And so what I would like to talk about for a couple minutes this afternoon is to give you some more of the financial background of this bill and the reasons that we really need to put resources into this. As I mentioned at the last hearing is that we have a growing number of groups that are supporting the bill, and you now have that new list of groups that are on this sheet, and that's grown from 12 groups that we talked about at the last hearing now to 27 organizations. So most of the major peoples of color, faith groups, as well as other groups and Indian Affairs Council have joined on as supporting this bill. What I'd like to talk about for a brief moment is some of the ways that we need to understand that we continue to have a growing disparity here in Minnesota, and as Representative Park indicated, is that we have the largest disparity in home ownership between Caucasian and people of color in the country. We also have disparities in health, in jobs, in education, that are growing and growing, and some of the largest, if not the largest, in the country also. As people of faith, we believe that we should live our faith every day and treat others the way that we would want to be treated, with opportunities, justice, equity, and mercy. As I mentioned at the last meeting, when we first brought this bill forward last year, it was with the African American Leadership Forum asking us to address the disparity. They came to MICA and Integrated Community Solutions asking us to introduce it. It ended up, much of the language ended up in the omnibus bill to address the disparity. And then Commissioner Tingerthal, with her staff, agreed to put $10.5 million into the 2014 action plan. Those are all things that we talked about at the last hearing. I'm not going to go over that again. Also, I presented a report from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve from October 2013, which is not in your packet. I do have copies here if you don't have that still. But just to address 10% of the disparity for people of color, of African American and Hispanic, we would need to increase by 11,272 homeowners just to decrease the disparity by 10%. This is a Federal Reserve number. What we're talking about with this $50 million would be about 265 units, homeowners. So you can see we have a long ways to go if we're going to address the disparity here in Minnesota. One of the reports that just came out, we had a press conference on it last week, is your second page in that packet if you want to join me in looking at it. But in advancing the health equity in Minnesota, on both pages 91 and 90, they clearly demonstrate the importance of home ownership, asset development in per capita income, and the devastating impacts of poverty on health. And as Representative Moran said at the last hearing, we know that when people do not have stable homes, the children do not do well in school, have a lot more health issues. It's very difficult for people to maintain employment, and it's critical that we have people stable in housing. Currently, if you go to your yellow sheet, and part of this is what we handed out at the last meeting on a green piece, but I want to show it as a warning signal to us that we are putting a great deal of money into home ownership right now. And in the 2014 plan, you can see on the top there that the Housing Finance Agency, while it will have $470 million to put into first-time home buyer mortgage loans, we actually will commit probably about $376 million, and only 23% of those will go to people of color. Again, this is on the yellow page, underlined at the very top box. And so what we have is a significant part of our population that is not getting the resources that we have available in the state for first-time home buyers. So it's important that we continue to expand the resources that we do have available so that all people have that opportunity to become homeowners. Now, one of the things that we need to recognize is that the ways that we do home ownership in this state and financing in this state may work very well for people that look like me, but may not work very well for people that are coming from a different country or a different culture or did not grow up in a home ownership situation. I'm probably one of the dinosaurs in this room in that I bought the house that I grew up in and have been there for 60 years. So, I mean, that's just not typical, you know, in our society now. So we need to recognize that we need to change the way that we actually create opportunities for people to actually become homeowners. And a part of this bill in House File 2112 is to do longer home ownership training beyond the very good program that we have, which is Home Stretch, which is for people that are pretty much ready to become homeowners right now but just need a little assistance in getting a little bit more training. But what we really need for some folks is a much more intensive home ownership training to really help them be able to develop the assets and the ability to take on that responsibility and to understand our financing system too. Plus, we need more flexible financing for people that do not do credit and do not do interest as a part of their faith or as a part of their culture. So we need to have much more flexibility so we can use our resources wisely. For those of us that are homeowners, which probably is a good number of us in the room, as I mentioned, I am one of those, we get a tremendous benefit every year. If you look at the bottom of that yellow page that we were just looking at, you can see through the tax expenditure budget, that's the money that we don't pay in, that we get to write off on our personal income taxes because we itemize and we have a mortgage, and we can write off up to $1 million worth of a home or homes on that mortgage. We do not take in 2014, $329,700,000. Now, that's money that we are investing in us as homeowners, basically, through that write-off. So it's not that we don't have enough money in this state to do home ownership for a much larger part of our population. It's just that how we're using our dollars is not for the right people. I mean, most of us in this room that own homes could do quite well and not be suffering too badly and not end up in homelessness if we did not have that write-off. And the market can handle, as Deputy Commissioner has indicated from Housing Finance Agency, that the financing that the Housing Finance Agency does on first-time home buyers is only about 1% of the market. So we need to focus more and more of our resources on the folks that are having trouble getting into home ownership, and that's exactly what this bill does. The other slide just tells you a little bit about the two programs that we were able to put into the 2014 program in the action plan, which we are very, very excited about and hope that the dollars are going to be out this summer. But what we're looking at with this $10.5 million is that we're only looking at about 44 loans that are going to be available for people of color. That's a good start. But again, we go back to what the Federal Reserve Bank said, just to deal with 10% of the disparity for African Americans and Hispanic, we have to do 11,272 new homeowners, okay, just to address 10% of the disparity. That green piece in, and I'm hopeful that David McGee is either here or going to be here soon, but maybe not, talks about the Build Wealth Minnesota program, which is a program that has, and there's two pieces in your packet, actually, one that looks like this and one that looks like this. And it talks about the great success that they're having, and it's really the model that's being utilized by the state agency as we're moving forward in the development of these programs that are the two new initiatives this summer. And so if we ended up with the $50 million, this is how we would be talking about splitting it up. $2.5 million would go into creating culturally competent services that would be run by culturally competent providers to provide long-term financial education on a one-to-one type of basis. And this would provide wraparound services and really prepare people to become homeowners. $47.5 million would go into a revolving loan mortgage program, and basically very similar to housing finance agencies, other programs, that would be money that would be available again to be able to loan out again. Again, though, with more flexibility to address the various cultures and communities that we have within our larger community. And I think we need to recognize this is our community. It's not those people. This is our community, and we are becoming more and more diverse every day. As you can see, the other line that is on the bill that hasn't been filled in would be $1.7 million. That would basically help in the development of the capacity of organizations that would be funded under this. Now, with the Build Wealth Program, as it has been looked at by the University of Minnesota Urban and Regional Affairs report, the social return on investment is $12 for every dollar. We're talking about for a $50 million investment, we get a $600 million return. So we need to start thinking about how are we going to be using our resources. And what we've seen in the Build Wealth Minnesota program is that in the folks that go through the long-term home ownership training, not all of them become homeowners. Some of them do better as far as in the rental market that they're in. About 35% of them end up becoming homeowners. The latest number that I just received from David McGee, who's the executive director, is that about 800 mortgages have been done by Build Wealth Minnesota. They've been following 100 of those homeowners long term. They have zero in default. Zero in default. So we know that if we can really help people get the understanding of how to become a homeowner and how financing works in our country, that we can really help stabilize folks. He only has five families that have ever had a late payment. Now that's pretty miraculous in what's happened over the last 7 to 9 years in the market, where we've had 150,000 households that have been foreclosed on here in the state of Minnesota. So let me conclude with a couple things. One, if you haven't had a chance to look at the Met Council's report on the Fair Housing Equity Assessment, what they're looking at is if we address the disparities in our metropolitan area in the next 40 years, and by 2040, I should say, in the next 30 years, by 2040, we will increase, the growth in personal income will be $34.5 billion in the metro area if we address the disparities. You do not have this in your report. I have it right here, and I can pass it around if you'd like. It's on page 6, section 1 of their latest draft. If we do not address the disparities, if we do not eliminate them, then our growth will only be $15 billion. So we have a choice. As a metro area and as a state, do we want to grow in the personal income of people in our communities or not? And if we address the disparity, all the research that the Met Council has put together, this is a report going to HUD, is that if we do not, David, come on up here. I'm doing part of yours right now. If we do not address the disparities, we will only increase personal income by $15 billion. If we address the disparities, we'll increase personal income by $34.5 billion. That's just in the metro area. So let me conclude and let David get settled in and come up and talk more about the Build Wealth Minnesota program. He is a former bank underwriter, very successful in developing this program. And as I mentioned, people are extremely successful. If we can move forward on $50 million, obviously we just gave back an incredible amount of money to most of us in this room. But if we can come up with $50 million for this program, we're going to be able to take more of those foreclosed homes that are sitting vacant in your community or maybe next door to you, as it is the case in a few in my neighborhood, and help people that are ready right now to get into home ownership. We're going to help stabilize communities. As those people move out of apartments, that's going to open up 260 to 300 apartments. And as I talk with people that are from different communities with very large families, they rent two or three apartments. So if they can move into their own home through home ownership, they're going to open up several different apartments, 260 to 300 apartments. We're going to help people build wealth, which is going to help them address their health issues, the disparities, the education issues, employment, and other needs in the community. We're going to stabilize communities by using homes for local home ownership, and that it will limit the use of this buying up that's happening with our community right now of all these foreclosed homes that we have more and more absentee landlord investors coming into your and my community buying these homes and just renting them. And if we can move people right into home ownership, we can stop part of that process. We're not going to stop it totally because we've had a lot of foreclosures over the last many, many years. But we can begin to stabilize our communities, and that we can make sure that we're increasing the assets of folks and having the opportunity for all people to do well in our community, as many of us have been more than able to do so over the last many years. Thank you. And thank you for being here, Dave.
Thank you. I'm David McGee, and I'm the Executive Director for Build Wealth Minnesota. And Build Wealth Minnesota, like a number of agencies across the state, provide a very long-term approach, a very comprehensive approach to teaching and educating and bringing back some social values and prioritization to families. A lot of families have been caught through generational patterns of lack and not understanding systems, and a lot of them been victims to a lot of predatory and high-cost lending practices like payday loans and some other things. And what we've been doing is taking a longer approach to training them and educating them, not just about trying to get a house, but in long-term home. Home is kind of what our focus is teaching them some fundamental practical values through a longer-term approach. It's usually 12. Most of these programs are 12 weeks plus for classroom training. There's peer learning. And then they're coupled with counselors and coaches that can kind of work with them to build on real sustainable budgets and sustainable opportunities and reaching out to other programs and products that may be able to help them a lot better. Tied to this home and trying to get, we've been trying to close the disparity gaps because there are a lot of families don't have the access or may not have been taught certain things. So we're trying to reinstill some different principles and teach them how to have some sustainable opportunities through this training. And there are about 15 organizations right now in the state that are doing this, and it's a very high cost, real hands-on approach. And a lot of these organizations are usually left with trying to fund and fight and scrape with different philanthropic organizations and foundations trying to get funding to do the work to help these families be more sustainable, to probably access some of the properties that Sue was talking about. And so when we were thinking about this bill and this particular program, we were looking at it on kind of a triple bottom line approach of really building opportunities for the first the program to get access to funding, because a lot of these families have been put behind the gun in terms of credit, so it takes longer to get them out of some of the credit challenges because of some of the earlier challenges that they got into by accessing predatory products. So it takes a little longer to kind of work on them. In the meantime, they're still they still meet certain parts of being able to get into home ownership. And so what we're trying to do is create an opportunity where we would be able to not just come up with a loan fund to just give free loans, but give some loans that kind of have an enhanced portion that kind of mandates the education component. And then while they're going through the education, after they've gotten through maybe 3 to 9 months worth of the education, they can access some loan products that will be a little less, you know, a little friendlier than some of the stuff that's in the marketplace right now. And so we didn't want to just create loans just to give loans to people because they have bad credit, but creating a pathway that's tied to education. And so this particular loan program that Minnesota Housing would administer, which they've already started the process for, is to really get these families the opportunity to access credit. That the credit scores now, you need a 680 to a 700. That could take 2 to 3 and sometimes 4 years for a family to get into. In the meantime, they're cost burdened in their rent. So they're paying $1,500 a month for rent when they could own a home for $800 to $900 for probably a property that's much better. And so our goal is to provide an opportunity for them to have access to more affordable, more friendly money. And also this particular pool was set up so it would be a revolving loan pool, and a portion of the servicing fees would go back into the pool to redistribute out to these organizations that actually do the work. So by, you know, approving a $50 million pool to start, it's not like we're just giving away money. We're actually investing money back into a revolving pool, so money will continue to go and funnel back into these organizations to help them do the wraparound services, to help strengthen the community, to help to get the foreclosures off the block. So it's a revolving, perpetual fund that we're trying to initiate here, so that it would be more of an investment as opposed to just coming up with money. And I know the state can come up with a number of reasons and places to put money, but what a great place to place money into a place that's going to restore and fix families, as well as take properties off of the rolls of the foreclosed properties. Property values will decrease when properties are foreclosed, so we're going to be strengthening property values, bringing back some of the tax revenue that's been lost, probably stopping some of the gluttony of that's going on with the high cost of managing and maintaining some of these foreclosed properties that are on the books. So it's a win-win triple bottom line bill here, and we just hope that you'll support it and we can move this forward, and hopefully we're growing this perpetual pool of funds in the future that can close disparity gaps, help strengthen families, help bring back communities, help bring our property values back. There's so many avenues and facets that this money and the future of this money could bring to our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's another couple folks who just like us.
I do have a question. Someone has a question. Should I take the question? Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the first testifier, in your presentation, you talked about the home ownership would help increase assets, and I get that. I have a farm, and with the land prices getting higher, my assets are going up. But that in itself doesn't help my cash flow. I mean, it, you know, it doesn't pay the bills. So the one thing I didn't hear a lot about And to me, it's important, you know, as education, job training, so people can increase incomes to help in this area of the home ownership. So could you talk about that for a second, that kind of training?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will start, and then if we can also have Mr. McGee also talk about it. The young lady that's sitting right behind you, Carol, raise your hand. She works for MICA. She's paying $1,600. Her rent may go up another $250 for a three-bedroom house right now. Because of some credit issues and some other things, she can't get into home ownership. She could get into a home ownership where she would be paying probably $1,000 or $1,200 a month. That's going to immediately increase her cash flow besides beginning to develop some equity. So I think, you know, there are a lot of houses that are out there that are available that we can get people into. Yes, some of them are going to need to be fixed up. And, you know, there are additional costs besides, as all of us know as homeowners, to, you know, what we have to pay besides, you know, just the actual monthly payment, if we still have a monthly payment. But it is a reduced cost, and we just continue to see rents going up more and more as the market continues to get tighter. When you have 150,000 households over the last 9 years, many of them moving into the rental market because they have lost their home to foreclosure, it has tightened that market where there are three people looking for every unit that's available in the community. So if we can get people into home ownership, it's going to open up that market a little bit more. I mean, we obviously we need to do creating more housing too, but we can move families out of 260, maybe 300 apartments fairly rapidly because folks are ready to go into home ownership right now. Anything that we pass right now to build is 2 to 3 years out potentially. So we need to think about, you know, a balance here of how do we get people, you know, moving, you know, up the ladder that many of us have already been able to go up on some steps that, you know, worked for us but aren't working for other people and are more like climbing a mountain instead. So we need to have some ways that people can get up to that. Clearly, helping people get into job training, into education, having them stable so that they can increase their abilities to access a good job is very good. But I can tell you, there are 2 to 3 people looking for every job that's out there too. So we continue to have this struggle, and I mean, as this is a very large issue, and I've been testifying before this committee, I think this is my 31st or 32nd year of testifying in front of this committee, is that we continue to have increasing homelessness, never like this ever in our history. This is a fourth decade of increase in homelessness. It's never happened before. And there's not been the moral outcry to say no, that we really are going to make sure that everybody has a home. And it costs us $3,000 a month for every family in shelter. It's an insane way to use our financial resources. So I'm going to let David talk about job training and the importance of that wraparound services.
Okay. Please restate your name for that.
My name is David McGee.
Yes.
And in response right now, we were asking specifically in the bill that money had went to organizations that had a track record with delivering these wraparound services. And inside of the bill, each of these organizations, and I believe there's 12 and hopefully more will be coming, but each of these organizations don't do just financial literacy. Each of these organizations do financial education, they do resource alignment, workforce development, entrepreneurship training, and technical assistance, where we're lining families up. So the goal, most of the families that we see usually have been trapped in these systems for so long that they're in jobs that are just jobs. And our goal is to try to move these families through this. Our program for Build Wealth Minnesota is family stabilization, and to be stable is to be more in where my career, what's in my heart, what was I driven or called to do, as opposed to just working at a job to survive. So we're trying to take them out of just survive to thrive. And as part of the program through the wraparound services, as they're linked up with coaches, the families have certain goals that they'd like to reach, but the programs, most of these programs have benchmarks that we need the families at as well. So if we have a family that comes into a program that's making $30,000 a year for a family of four, that's not stable. And so when you begin to start identifying what kind of work they're doing in the home, we know that those aren't livable wages. And so as part of the wraparound services to make that family stable, that program through internally or some of its resource partners they link to, they try to link those families with that wraparound services. So they may go to Summit Academy, so now they can begin to get a skill or a trade, or we may send them back to school. We've had a young lady who came in, wasn't making enough. She's got four children. She's only making $22,000 a year, and I mean, that's scraping. And so when we ask families, when we start digging in and making things more transparent, we're asking, you know, well, what would you like to do? Well, almost like a whisper, she looks around to see who's looking. It's been hidden in her so long, it's like, I've always wanted to be a nurse. Well, why aren't you a nurse? Well, I'd have to go back to school. You know, it's like, well, did you know we could get you back in school? Well, I owe student loans. Oh, well, did you know there's a program that we can get you on that through resource alignment that we can, you start making payments for the next 4 or 5 months, they can actually put those back in deferment and get you back into school. Now, this young lady has went back to school and has got a certificate. Now, she's a nurse's aide, and she's making $38,000. Still not as livable as it should be for a family of four, but she's more stable than she was. Now she's able to save money and build up. So this program, as we were asking, like $2.5 million to begin to go into a pool to start giving these organizations that are doing that hard, heavy lifting and hand-holding through all of its access partners and moving them around, as opposed to just sending them through, giving them the certificate. We need more money. You know, we need more money to entail bring more money to community and bring more money to these families. And so what a great investment to create a pool that, instead of coming back to the legislature or going back all the time to our philanthropic community, we can find a pool of resources that these organizations will be able to hire the right people, be able to help more people to kind of make this perpetual growth and stability for the whole community. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's what we're doing in this wraparound services, and that's what the bill specifically asking for the money. So we're not just asking for a handout, we're asking for literally a perpetual pool that begins to generate. This is a program that could have national attention as we move forward.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a few questions. And if it sounds like I'm picking on you, I'm not. You mentioned some things, and I'd like to get them clarified. You had said something about 23% of the communities of color are accessing the first-time home mortgage, and the median income there is $44,000. Now, personally, doesn't make any difference to me what color you are if you're in the range. But in that range, what percentage of the of that demographic is communities of color?
Mr. Chair, Representative
please
Green.
State your name for the record.
Sue Watlow Phillips and Micah. So you're asking me, of the 23%, how many are in that 44,000 range?
No, I'm asking you of the pool of the people applying for the home first-time home buyers in that $44,000 income. How many, what percentage of that are communities of color, or families of color?
23% are the ones that are able to get the loans.
I understand
And let me finish it, if I may. My understanding is on the 100,000 that are canceled, or the less about 96 million that are canceled, the commitments that are canceled, about 28% of those are people of color. And the rest are Caucasian. And I don't have that right in front of me, but that was my understanding from the Housing Finance Agency. Clearly, there are income limits, levels that you need to have to qualify for a first-time home buyer loan program. And certainly, the agency is much better, and Mr. McGee probably is, as far as, you know, what level you need to have to get into home ownership. We know through Habitat and through other types of self-help types of home ownership programs that we can get people into lower income levels. We think that with some adjustments that we may be able to also get people with more limited incomes into a home buyer program similar to the one in House File 2112.
You have a follow-up?
I'm going to try again. If you have a pool of people applying, what percentage of the people applying are families of color? Because you're saying 23%, and what I'm getting at is I'm not arguing your statistics. I'm just saying, is that equal to what percentage is applying?
Mr. Chair, Sue Watlow Phillips, Representative Green. I would say that Minnesota Housing Finance, this is Minnesota Housing Finance Agency statistics. This is not mine. This is in their 2014 plan. And so I would want to defer that to the Housing Finance Agency staff to tell you exactly what percentage are actually applying for those loans.
Okay.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Well, we'll keep going here. The $47.5 million you were talking about putting into the financing, and we've heard a lot in this committee and others about protections in place for those who can't pay. Do those protections that we're talking about, will they apply to the folks who are getting this money also?
Ms. Phillips?
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, if you look on this side of this sheet again, what you will see in the programs that the Housing Finance Agency has put into play this summer, they'll come out this summer, is a new targeted mortgage opportunity program. The $10 million, $2 million of that is from the risk pool to help make sure that there is coverage for the loan to address some of that risk. We anticipate that we would see some similar types of activity if we would move forward with this bill to have some of that type of protections for those dollars. And again, Mr. Chair, if Mr. McGee may answer that further too.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to comment. The protections, as I stated in my earlier testimony, we're not just giving away loans. We are still following strict FHA guidelines. We're following Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guidelines in approving these mortgage products. I believe some of the protections, the biggest protection, is educating the people prior to going in and working with licensed and certified coaches and counselors. They still have to meet underwriting criteria. This particular loan pool is still set up like any other loan pool. The goal is that there'd be a secondary market that would be available to purchase these loans. And so all protections that are necessary to protect the family, the bank, Minnesota Housing, and the state money is still in full effect. There's just certain parts of the credit that is going to be a little more lenient based on families that might have gotten into some issues early on. There's going to have to be compensating factors for them to be able to get this money. So we're just not going to be just a free-for-all just because you're a minority or person of color. You get a loan automatically or you're a first-time home buyer. There's strict guidelines that are in these loans as well. It's going to be somewhat limited, and there's going to be so much hand-holding, and we're talking about mandated 38 to 40 hours with education, training, a coach, a counselor. So there's going to be a lot of things put in place to kind of give strength to this money. The money is already being used, and there's money being used in similar situations with Urban Homeworks has a Project Reclaim program. The state has allotted a lot of money to the land trust model as well. City of Lakes Community Land Trust has a similar model. We're still allowing people to get into the homes with some credit challenges. However, with all of the things that are put in with the wraparound services, those are some of the things that are protections that are being put in place. They don't just get a loan. They still have to go through strict underwriting.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, moving down the list here, it says on the bottom of the green page that today 35% of the families engaging in this type of program become successful, sustainable homeowners. So does that mean 65% default?
That does
Go ahead, Mr. Testifier.
That does not. That okay. just does. Everybody's not meant to be a homeowner, and everybody's not ready. Even though that there's 100% in the pool, everybody's not ready. So there's still people that are currently in this program that maybe next year they'll be ready, but they're not ready. Those are those protections we're talking about. But those that go through the full process, 35% of those folks are actually in a position to have gotten a good job, gotten on a path of being able to be a good steward over their savings. They've been able to be in a position to even handle home ownership. And everybody's not. And it's going to take some folks longer than others. And so 35% of them are actually coming out of this doing very well.
Okay. We're almost finished.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Green.
How much of the two other questions. One is what interest rates are being charged on the money?
Our goal is that these will be market rates or less than market rates.
Okay. First and then, if I may, how much of the money then, or is any of this money going into the counseling?
The goal through this particular program is that we're hoping that for the first 2 years, the servicing fees that, you know, interest is collected for the most part during the first 8 years of a mortgage. And so we're hoping that the first 2 years of this particular pool, the interest would actually go back into and be redistributed quarterly or through RFPs to organizations that are doing the work.
Okay. So the interest would be going for the the interest would be going back into that what comes in, so there's really no safeguard there for default. If someone defaults on the loan, because that money then would, if they default on the loan, then you have a harder time getting, you know, then you have to resell the property and start all over. But I'm just going to ask one more thing, and it's more kind of a statement. As a homeowner, I will tell you that when you say things like they're paying $1,300 a month rent and they can get by with $800 a month house payment, if you own your own home, you know that's not true. And I hope that that's included in the counseling, because I think people get a real shock when they come into a home and they find out that their property taxes are $2,000 to $5,000 a year. Maybe it's even more down here, and that when the water heater goes out, that's an expense, and the electric bills that have to be paid now, and the heating bills, and the furnace, and all the repairs. It's not always, in fact, many times it's not at all cheaper to own a home than it is to rent, and I really hope that that's stressed, because that can be a real, that'll rip the heart right out of you when you get in there and find out you can't make your mortgage because you've got to make repairs on your home. And so I hope that that's taken into account on this. The other thing is that you do still, I've seen this in a lot of committees, you constantly equate the homelessness with the people who are now in an apartment and want to buy a home, and I would like to see a little more distinction there as to who you're talking about, because obviously the people who are homeless need help, but to think that, to give them the false assumption that they're going to go from homelessness to home ownership is a little bit a stretch. So,
Mr. Chair,
if you want to respond?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Sue Watlow Phillips and Representative Green, I apologize if I gave the idea that we were saying that people are going to move from homelessness into home ownership. Clearly, we're trying to get people out of rental apartments that could move into home ownership right now, to open up apartments so that we can get people out of shelters that are costing us a lot of money and help them so that they can move along in life and get jobs and have their kids stable in school and continue to move on in their lives and the dreams that they have. This we have to look at this in a holistic community way. And we continue not to do that. And again, as people of faith, we truly believe that we need to start treating others the way that we treat ourselves. We do very well, those of us in the middle class and upper classes, in regards to our housing situation. We need to make sure that everyone has opportunities to have a home.
All right, thank you. Representative Anderson, you have a quick question, and then we have another testifier.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess this would be to Representative Clark. We're talking about $50 million here, and on your A14 amendment, it looks like it's $58 million. Is that the total appropriation you're seeking in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, we're seeking whatever we can get to make a beginning here. I'm not sure where you get the $58 million, but the...
Well, it's on the front page of the A14 amendment, total appropriation, $58.748
million. This is session law that you're looking at here.
So that's currently in statute.
This is currently what we were amending the appropriations from last year. We're just going into those existing appropriations from last year and looking at some of the language. This is what we were advised by our council to do in terms of trying to make sure that we're looking at these ideas of inequalities in home ownership. And a way to address it was to look at the last year's session law where we've already got that commitment. I'm not changing that last year's appropriations. This $50 million would be a separate bill. And I don't expect we're going to get $50 million, if that's what you were saying. This is session law from last year.
I'm confused. I'm really confused now.
maybe Ms. Mullen or Hendricks would like to comment on that. Whoever. Whichever one of you.
Would you like to take that question? Go ahead.
Chair and representatives, the amount that's listed at the top of the amendment that you're looking at is the appropriation that was in the jobs and housing omnibus bill last year. So that's the appropriation for that program that runs through the biennium. And they're just changing the rider language associated with that to create sort of a priority and a focus for that funding. Now, the $50 million that they've referred to at different times throughout the hearing is in the original bill, 2112, and that's online, page 1, line 11, and that's a separate new funding that's being sought. So on the amendment, what you're looking at, that's money that's already been appropriated to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
I guess, Mr. Chair, then my question is, why is this year-old language included in the amendment? And it just seems confusing to me. And I understand what research has said, and I will take her at her word, and I will just listen.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Anderson. So you have another testifier, Representative Clark. I believe Hector Garcia would like to...
Okay. Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, I want to provide some time then for Minnesota Housing Finance Agency
right.
to Hector. Yes, that's fine. And I think Sia maybe too.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Hector Garcia, the Executive Director of the Latino Affairs Council. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Bill 2112, which I believe is a direly needed investment in the future. I'd like to focus on the holistic systemic perspective, which I think should guide us in making decisions about this bill, and that is premised by the fact that I belong to the Report on Poverty Interagency Group and the Council on Homelessness, and I'm sure you're all familiar with them, and we're trying to grapple with the challenges that are threatening the future of the state. And I think this particular bill is the needed bridge to a better future for all Minnesotans. As has been mentioned already, housing is pivotal to health, to education, to access to the financial system, and to avoid youth getting into risky behavior and situations. The demographics are one of the essential things to consider. Between 2000 and 2010, our community, the Latino community, grew by 74.5%. During that same period, the growth of European Americans was 1.6%. Now, we know that the workforce is retiring very quickly, so we and other communities that are growing very rapidly and who are young, because our median age is 24. Hispanics born in Minnesota, median age is 14 years old. So it doesn't take much calculation to figure out who's going to be the workforce of the future. And if that workforce has poor education, gets into trouble, drops out of school, I'm afraid the payment of entitlements and escalating costs of education and health is not going to be forthcoming. There is a famous Peruvian economist by the name of De Soto, who wrote a couple of fascinating books. One is The Third Path, and the other one is The Magic of Capitalism. He sent a team of researchers throughout the world to study six underdeveloped nations and nations in the West. And he discovered, prior to anybody else, a very obvious fact that everybody seemed to have been missing, that the pivotal factor in the success of capitalism was a legal property title system. And he has been preaching this concept throughout a lot of the underdeveloped nations and the former Soviet Union. So if we don't want to end up falling into the trap of those nations who have not been able to implement capitalism successfully, I really believe that we should consider bills such as this one very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I don't forgo any other witnesses. I think we need to move on and make sure that we get a chance to hear from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency today. So I would just move that this be laid over for possible consideration.
All right. Chair moves that House File Number 2112, as amended, will be laid over for further inclusion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bly, for taking us through that. The next item on the agenda is to hear from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And so I'd like to ask them to come forward. Thank you for coming today. Just wanted to get an update from you and partly to talk about some of the resources that they've been alluded to in the previous discussions, but the resources that the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has in addition to the appropriations that we are able to deal with. And I'll just let you start with that and see if there's questions from the committee. I know there have been some questions about how this all works, and so if you can help shed a little light on that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Tanya Orr. I'm an Assistant Commissioner with the Housing Finance Agency, and with me is Katie Topinka, who is the Legislative Liaison for the agency. We were asked to talk about the agency's funding sources, and so we're just going to review that information very briefly. We have handed out several pieces of parts of documents to help refer you to where this information can be found. The first page of the handout is a copy of the agency profile from the 14-15 biennial budget pages, and the highlighted area, I think, is the written summary of the agency's funding sources. So just to review, we have four funding sources: state appropriations, federal funds, private activity bonds, and agency resources. The next page, the colorful graphic, is for those of you who like pictures as opposed to words. You have that information there. Now, there is a difference in the numbers. The agency profile was filed in 2012, and the graphic is based on 2013 information, and the numbers do shift slightly. So we thought we would just very briefly go over what these various funding sources are. And Ms. Topinka is going to talk about state resources and federal resources.
All right. Thank you again. My name is Katie Topinka from the Housing Finance Agency. If you turn to the second to last page in your packet, that's from our annual affordable housing plan, which is the agency's annual budget. And there's a description of the different resources there, which is what we're going to be talking about. So federal resources come to the agency from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Federal resources make up about 25% of the agency's overall budget. And included in those resources are funding for project-based Section 8. As you may recall, the agency is the administrator for the project-based Section 8 contracts in the state. So that's money that comes to the agency and then is passed through to those developments to operate those buildings. There's also from HUD the Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS program, HOPWA. That's just a small amount of funding that the agency receives and again administers to organizations that provide housing for persons with AIDS. We also receive about this year was about $6.3 million from the federal HOME program, and HOME funds are used for housing development in the state for preservation of rental housing, and then we also use HOME funds as a down payment assistance program. And then lastly, we receive the low-income housing tax credits, which are a federal tax credit that are used to get equity for housing development. And we receive about $7 million in tax credits each year that are allocated through our competitive request for proposal process. Then the next paragraph down on that sheet is state appropriations, which you are all familiar with. But again, state appropriations make up about 9% of the agency's overall budget. And last year, you appropriated about $100 million for the biennium. And those go into programs like the Challenge Program, the Housing Trust Fund, Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance, homeownership assistance, which is down payment assistance, preservation, housing counseling, and a couple of others, rental rehab loans, homeownership rehab, and capacity building. And most of those resources are allocated through competitive request for proposal processes as well. The homeownership programs are distributed through local lenders to homeowners that apply on a pipeline basis, but the rest are through a competitive process. Then I'll turn it back over to Ms. Orr to talk about the other sources of funds.
As you can see from the graphic, over half of the agency's resources are bond proceeds. These are tax-exempt bond proceeds. The federal government allocates to states based on a per capita basis an amount of tax-exempt bonds that can be issued in any one year. The state then, through the legislative action, has allocated the tax-exempt bonding authority to various activities and various issuers. So the Housing Finance Agency, the City of Minneapolis, the City of St. Paul, and Dakota County are all what are called entitlement issuers. Tax-exempt bonds are also used for manufacturing or what's known as the small issue pool, so it's for small businesses. There's a little bit for public infrastructure and a small amount that is used for the Rural Finance Authority. There's a limit on the amount of taxes and bonding authority the agency has in any one year. This is through the tax code, so there are lots of limitations on what we can do with it, but we can use it for private activity bonds. So it's the unlike your general obligation bonds, it can only be used for publicly owned properties. This can be used for home ownership and for rental housing. We issue bonds every year. We try very hard, and we don't leave any of the bonding authority on the table. We issue these bonds, and then they are revenue bonds, so we have to repay those bonds. And they are repaid from the mortgage payments that the first-time home buyers make, and then we repay the bondholders. The bond proceeds are over 50% of the agency's total annual budget. The final item is what is termed agency resources. These are made up of two pots of money. One is money that is used for investment grade loans. This is money that is budgeted by our board according to an investment policy. It is money that is vetted by the rating agencies. So the rating agencies, when we issue bonds, look at the financial strength of the agency, and provide advice about how much money needs to be invested in investment-grade loans or securities in order to maintain the agency's high credit rating. We have a AA+ from Standard & Poor's and an A, little A, one from Moody's. Thank you. those monies can only be used for loans. We make loans to for rental housing development, and we also make home improvement loans out of that pot of money. It also can only be used for by board action and our statutory authority for housing purposes. And finally, a small amount of money is made available for the Housing Affordability Fund, which is a pool of money that is more flexible than the Housing Investment Fund, and it can be used for deferred loans, so for activities that are similar to the activities that are funded with state appropriations. That, as I explained a couple of weeks ago, is an amount of money that is after we pay the bondholders, after we pay the costs of operating the agency, then if there is money left over, we can by board action, it is made available to the Housing Affordability Fund. The amount that's available varies from year to year depending upon agency activities. There have been years when no new money has been available. In the last year, about $17 million was available in the Housing Affordability Fund. So we thought it would be helpful also to remind you again about how this money is spent in terms of activities. So the final handout, or the final page in your handout, is a graphic about the activities that get funded with this money and the number of households that are served in the various activities. I would point out that rental assistance includes the Section 8 contract administration, so that's part of the reason that it's such a large portion of the total household served. So we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from committee members? Yeah, well, I'll just make a couple comments, and I think it's important that we do know that the small amount of the funding that comes from our appropriations, and that the majority, you know, the funding that you're to deal with really comes from other sources. And going over this again, I think, is somewhat helpful. I think one of the reasons that we asked you to come today, too, I think, in regard to the bill that was before us, is because that is one place where you are dedicating a portion of the funding from Pool 3, I believe it is, to, or maybe it's Pool 2, to the to what we're talking about in House File 2112 and the Home Opportunities Made Equitable pilot project. And I want to say I think it's you know, it's really laudable that the agency has figured out that and put that towards specifically dealing with some of the racial disparities. That's really an important asset that you're helping build and that we count on. And I think in some of our discussions, not here, my understanding is that although we don't have the $50 million now to be appropriated or to be talked about in terms of doing anything with your pools, I think my understanding is that we can possibly look forward to some growth in that if there's a success with the information that we heard today. And I just wondering if you would share a little bit, whatever you're comfortable sharing with that, with community members, because I think it's hopeful, and it is the kind of thing that I think the community needs to know as well.
Certainly, Madam Chair. We met with Mr. McGee and others in May of last year and talked about how we could help with providing a mortgage product that provided some concessionary underwriting to help address the further address the disparity in homeownership rates. As you know from the program assessment that we hand out every year, one that looks like this for this year, the agency has typically done provided about 22% of the homeowners or the homebuyers that it has served are households of color, but we recognize that there is a significant disparity in homeownership rates, and we're looking for other ways to help address this gap. We are working on developing a mortgage product that would be essentially manually underwritten, that would take into consideration, while someone might not have a credit score that would allow them to get a sort of a private sector mortgage at this point, that maybe there are other factors that would indicate that they are a good credit risk, such as having paid their utilities on time for 3 years or having a rent that is more than what their mortgage payment would be. We have budgeted $8 million of the Housing Investment Fund for these mortgages, and have also budgeted a certain amount to cover the risk. So one of the things we have to do is, if we're making investments, we have to tell our bondholders what we're doing, and we have to give them assurances that these bonds will be repaid. And so one of the ways that we do this is to have a pool of money that would cover what is perceived to be an additional risk. We have every confidence that we will work with organizations that have good track records in making loans, and that we will not experience any greater rate of default or delinquency than what we experience in our normal program. But we need to reassure bondholders that we have the resources available in case there is a default. Our hope is, and our intention is, that once we establish a track record and the money that we have budgeted for this, once it is utilized, that we will again make an additional commitment of funding for this activity. This is not the only activity that the agency engages in to try and address the disparity rate or disparity gap. We have provided funding for a contract for deed program that also helps with people who do not have do not meet the tight credit standards that currently exist. As was mentioned, we have we fund Habitat, and we have funded the Community Land Trust, all that are at attempts to get at the affordability issues and credit issues. We expect to launch this product sometime this summer, and so by a year from now, we may have some experience to be able to report.
Thank you. you. I just wanted all the whole community to know where we might be going with this. Representative Mariani, did you have a question? Comment?
Madam Chair, just very quickly, because I know we're, and I got to run over to the, for a meeting at the Capitol myself, yeah. But I just think it's really wise that, you know, you're having an opportunity for the committee to make sure that we're constantly aligning our policy, you know, frameworks and interests and, you know, how we're responding to, you know, to our constituents with, you know, the incredible tools that exist inside this department. And, you know, it's pretty easy, I imagine, for us not to be having that kind of interaction. The department could do one thing and we could do another thing and we might, you know, wind up not maximizing, you know, public resources. We heard earlier, you know, that some of the trends are pretty, you know, kind of pretty scary for us as a state. And I think, you know, and that has to do with all sorts of big changes demographically and economically that are happening for Minnesota. And so I think the more that we're able to be very shrewd and strategic about how we align, you know, direct state, you know, appropriations with the tools that the department has where they're accessing, you know, market sources as well as federal funds, I think is a really smart and incumbent thing for us to do in the coming years. So anyway, I just want to acknowledge and thank you for offering that opportunity mm-hmm. to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just want to tell the committee members, one of the things we've also talked about doing is bringing in probably some of the other lenders. Our state agencies making a lot of stretches. They're working really hard at trying to deal with some of these issues. We know that some of the major problems with some of these disparities has to do with the private market, the banking industry, and so on. And so we've been talking about trying to bring them to the table maybe at our next meeting and just try to see what other future kind of interactions we might expect. And I think you set the table for that, Representative Mariani, with your comments. So thank you, committee members. We do need to give the room up unless there's anybody else have a comment or question for our... You didn't see? Okay, well then, thank you very much for coming today. I appreciate it. The meeting is adjourned.